Hello, friends, family, people I have never met before. Welcome to the Woodshed. This is my podcast. It's early. It's early in the morning today as I sit here recording. It's early. I haven't even spoke a single word yet. So forgive me if I sound kind of tired and a little froggy because that's how it is when you wake up. Today I'll be talking with Dallas Moore, Uncle Dallas, affectionately, is what he is referred to. We'll figure out why today in the interview. Dallas is in Texas. He's been doing it. And I reached out to him, gosh, quite a few months ago. And I know how it goes, you know. Then I rejoined Facebook and I started making little comments and we talked. And now I'm going to talk to him on the interview. So pretty excited about it. Dallas Moore. Thank you so much to Malolo Coffee Roasters here in Southern Oregon. We have five locations in Southern Oregon. And I'll tell you what, if you haven't had a Dancing Elephant from them, you're not living, okay? It's real good. I enjoy that and their caramel macchiato. Those are two of my favorites. If I'm not just drinking their black coffee, which is what I do every day. I drink that every day. It is super yummy. They're big on taste. Family owned and operated since 1992. And yeah, we've got a cool thing where if you live somewhere else and you want to buy a couple bags of coffee, it's easy. Just get on their website, grab two bags, whatever you want, whatever variety you want, and use the code Woodshed24 on checkout, and you won't pay shipping. Usually you need three bags to do that. So two bags, that code, free shipping. Malolo Coffee Roasters, do it. Also, big thank you to Moxley Media. They're doing great stuff. They always help me out with things, including sponsorship on an event coming up in January. If you need anything cool like t-shirts, branded things like t-shirts, hats, hoodies, stickers, banners, shoot, even customized pins, I mean, the mind is a really great thing, and they'd probably do it. So if you're looking for something in the merch arena, you can email them info@moxleymedia, M-O-X-L-E-Y, info@moxleymedia.com, and radneck.co. Radneck is a brand that's out there in the planetary areas that Moxley actually prints for. So if you want fun shirts, fun hoodies, a fun hat, radneck.co is your brand. These guys are great, good people, and we've been with them for almost a year. It's going to be a year here really soon. By the way, something I haven't even spoke about, I am quickly approaching 200 episodes. I think this one will be 196 or 197. I'd have to check. Off the top of my head, I know I'm real close. So this is really exciting. And I know that most podcasts are the average lifespan of a podcast is 20 episodes. So I have done a lot and it's really great. Looking back at who I've had on and who I'm getting on, it's pretty fun. So, hey, let's get Dallas on. Okay, here we go. Dallas Moore on Welcome to the Woodshed.
When I'm feeling like I just don't want to deal with the world today, I go down to the woodshed where all we do is pick and play. Play a song for the underdogs and the happy-going-lucky. Play a song for the Californios and East Kentucky. And when I'm feeling like I just don't want to deal with the world today, I go down to the woodshed where all we do is pick and play. I go down to the woodshed where all we do is pick and play.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I have Uncle Dallas Moore on the line from San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, sir.
Hey, top of the morning, me amigo. How y'all doing today?
You know what? If I were any better, there'd be two of me. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Sometimes that might come in handy.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'd love to have a clone. I can make double the money, and we have And we have a big enough house for another one of me. And I don't know if I have to ask my wife, you know, like, we'll see. But
I know.
Buddy, I've been up.
Well, then you can ask yourself, was I there?
Was that me or was that the other me?
Was that me or?
Yeah. Yeah. I wake up to, baby, last night was great. I'm like, hold on.
That's right.
Dallas, where did the moniker Uncle Dallas come from?
Man, it's crazy, craziest thing. I don't actually 100% know.
Okay,
but,
perfect.
It goes back a long way, and I think at some point it might have been down at the Floribama in Perdido Key, Florida. You know, one of the times, you know, back in the probably the early 2000s, maybe. And somebody just called me Uncle Dallas, and it just stuck at one time. And that was back in the old days. I used to always be the youngest guy in the band.
Okay.
You know, in some of my first nine lives, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, my first album came out in 1996. Hmm. And my heroes have always been cowboys. So it was my first Dallas Moore album. And it was probably not long after that where I kind of got the handle of Uncle Dallas. And like I said, I was the youngest guy in the band, you know, back in those days. And now I've, you know, lived long enough to where now I'm the old guy. so I kind of grew into the Uncle Dallas thing, but it just kind of got thrown out there and stuck many, many moons ago. And so here we are.
I love it, man. I'm here for it. And it's funny because I, you know, I reached out a while back and then, you know, I rejoined Facebook and I'm following artists that I've talked to, like Jarrett Forrester, and he made a post of Uncle Dallas, and I was like, man, is that your uncle? I'm like, I'm trying to get him on, and then I reached out again, and you and I made the connection, and he was like, oh no, he's not really my uncle, but you know, that's what everyone calls him. I was like, okay,
and then I started. Everybody calls me.
It was pretty good. Man, you got a career in music that spans over 25 years and 17 albums released. Like, how did it all start?
Well, when I was 16 years old, my mama, Major Lee, she got me my first guitar and ruined my life. I played baseball, up until that time. You know, I really didn't have anything pursuing music, you know, other than when I was 7 years old, I sang. I don't think I was seven. I might have been 6 years old because I hadn't had a birthday yet. I sang at my sister's wedding. When I was 6 years old, I sang two Elvis Presley songs, you know, with the wedding band, which was my cousin's band. And, you know, but, and I love music and stuff, but I had never, you know, really, you know, pursued anything other than, you know, like in the fifth grade, I think I took clarinet or something like that, so I could sit behind the girl that I thought was the prettiest girl in the class, you know. But I didn't seriously, you know, pursue any kind of music, you know, any musical instrument really. And I played baseball and football, and I boxed a little bit, you know. And then when I was 16 years old, my mama, Maggie Lee, she got me my first guitar to keep me out of trouble, you know. and then there we go, and it just kind of took off, you know. From there, I got that first guitar, which I still have. It's an old single pickup K electric guitar, and I've still got it. But I learned my first, you know, few chords like immediately, and I started playing, you know, as soon as I got the guitar and could make my first couple chords, I started playing, you know, the songs by, like, you know, the people that I liked. Like, I was always loved Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, and Lynyrd Skynyrd, and the Allman Brothers, and stuff like that. That's the music that I listened to, you know. And I'd been exposed to a lot of music from my mom. Mama Maggie Lee, she was on the Midwestern Hayride back in the early 1950s, and she had a couple hit records. I still have her old 78s, wow. The old 78 records. Her group's called the Buckeye Bells. And so she.
Ohio. She Ohio.
Yes. Yes. I grew up in Norwood, Ohio, which is part of right in the middle of Cincinnati.
Okay.
And that so I grew up living there. Graduated from Norwood High School in 1988, and our family also grew up in Kentucky. That's where my mom and dad were from, and we had a place in Kentucky as well. From the time I was 4 years old, and we split our time between Norwood and Cincinnati and Owenton, Kentucky, as well as the farm in McKinney that my dad grew up on. So and then I also kind of spent a lot of time in Charleston, South Carolina. So this is all of my childhood, growing up. And my mom, getting back to her music thing, she had come up in 1941. Her family moved to Norwood, Ohio from Leco, Kentucky. And when she was in high school, they started recording at Herzog Studios in Cincinnati. And she had their biggest song was called Down by the Riverside. And it was her and two other ladies. And mom played the guitar and was one of the harmony singers. And I've still got her record, but I also still have the old Victrola that she played the old 78 wow. records on. And I have her entire collection of 78s. Huh. And she used to play all that stuff all around the house. So when I was a little kid, I was listening to, Elvis Presley and Waylon Jennings and stuff like that. But through my mom, she had all of the original Hank Williams 78.
Wow.
And she had all of that, all of the Lefty Frizzell stuff. Bill Monroe, Jimmy Martin, and Mac Wiseman, and all the bluegrass greats, the Osborne brothers, and everything like that. But she also had stuff like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and then Count Basie, and then she also had all this classical music. She had all these 78s of that, and then she also had a regular record player that we would, play regular LPs and vinyls and stuff on. But I just remember her cranking that old Victrola up, and she had all this music that would play around. And then, growing up in the early and mid 70s and stuff, the music that was playing on the kitchen radio was the golden era of, country and southern rock and everything like that. So the music that was playing on the radio of my childhood was all of that, So that was the music that I gravitated to. And then so when I got a guitar, I immediately started writing my own songs because I just was already able to. I used to put little rhymes and poems and stuff together, before that. And when I was in school, I would like write short stories and things like that. So as soon as I got a guitar, I started writing, but I also started learning how to play the songs that I liked, and so it just kind of took off very fast for that. So that would have been 1986 when I got my first guitar then. And from there, I graduated high school in 1988, and I got to go to Northern Kentucky University on a jazz and classical guitar scholarship.
Wow.
And so I went, and in the daytime, I was playing Bach and Beethoven and Paganini and doing things like that. And I also it afforded me the only time I ever got to play in a jazz big band, with a full horn section and, everything, And I started right away, even at an early age, like connecting the dots, that all the music really was connected and it wasn't that far removed from one another. Right off the bat, Willie Nelson was always one of, if not my favorite guitarist. And I went down the whole rabbit hole of who Willie's influence was, and I found out that his guitar hero was the gypsy jazz guitarist Django Reinhardt. And so I started, when I was at Northern Kentucky University, I started studying Django and along with Willie. And I also started realizing playing with the big band that the numbers, the standards and things that we were playing with the jazz big band, what Count Basie and Tommy Dorsey and Charlie Christian and all those guys were doing was not too far removed from what Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys were doing.
Yeah.
And it was very, very similar. And I was like, oh man, all this stuff connects. And so I just kind of connected the dots, you know, in my head and just kept on just trying to go from there and see what it was. So that's kind of a long answer there, but yeah, that's kind of how it all started.
Dallas, I've been a DJ a real long time. I started young, and if I need a good country waltz, what am I playing?
Oh man, you can't go wrong with Waltz Across Texas.
My go-to is, my heroes have always been Cowboys.
Oh well, there you go. Yeah. You can't go wrong with that either.
It's a favorite. It's a classic. I listened to it as a child with my dad's record collection. So you and I grew up in a different time of music, you know, listening to records, and you have like a physical relationship to listening to music because you got to get up and flip it over. And then you got to get up and put on another record. Nowadays, yeah, you just, you know, put it on whatever you're using and you just sit there. It's way different. I feel like a detachment from listening to music. And honestly, it used to be really hard for me to listen to music without counting beats per minute and hearing where I would play it. And that's kind of why, that's one of the reasons why I do this podcast, is because I like to introduce songs that musicians that you're not getting on the radio, you know, you know, around here. You know, you might have songs on the radio in Texas because they do that down there, but they don't do it up here, man. It's funny because, like, I talked to you before we hit record. I was telling you about my trip between here to Florida, and driving through Texas, buddy. When we got into like Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia, I was finding radio stations that played things that I was like, wait a minute, man, they are playing.
right.
And I found a hip hop station that had a live DJ thing going too. And, you know, I'm listening to this DJ spinning vinyl and cutting and scratching, and, you know, and I know what he's doing. And it was great because we don't have that up here. And it's all super, super mainstream. If you ain't playing Usher at a wedding, you're not getting gigs. You know what I'm saying?
It's silly. Right.
Yeah, I'll pepper in some of the stuff that I know independent-wise on like the cocktail hour music where people aren't committed to it. You know, they're eating dinner, they're talking, and someone will come up and go, oh, who was that? And I'll show them. They're, oh, that's really great. But man, you play a lot of shows. You're at around 300 dates every single year. Like, how do you stay motivated to do that?
Well, you got to roll the wheels to pay the bills.
That's it, man.
And really, not to oversimplify that, that's kind of my little saying that I've been saying for a long, long time. Cause I have been over 300 shows for a year for a long time. Now this year, actually though, 2025, when I hit New Year's Eve, I've taken a little bit more time off this year. And I'm probably going to come up, probably in the like high 280s, maybe around 290. This is going to be the first year, probably at least 12, 13 years, if not longer than that, that I won't be over 300. I think that the most I ever did was one year I played 329 shows.
All right, look, let's do the math, Dallas. Okay. Here's the thing. What people think, you know, people think about, like, or they have an opinion or an idea of what a traveling musician does. And we're talking like, you got to get in the car. You got to get the gig. You know, you got to come to a financial agreement, you know, you got to get the gig and you got to load in. I'm assuming you're bringing PAs or is that in your rider?
It depends on it's both. We have a small PA that we travel with now, but most it's provided at most things that we do. But I always have our full setup, for my acoustic shows, and I have as well as I have all of the backline for the full band all traveling with me at all times. So, so we can set up and do a small type of event you know, with what we have. And I can do every little bit of that. But at most of the venues, they got everything provided. But yeah, you gotta have your tools to work. We're set up. You never know when something's going to pop up. So we gotta be prepared.
One time I took my wife to a wedding gig, and because people we knew, you know, and that's sort of how I earn my, my side money now, is it's people that I know. I'm saying no a lot more. I've done it a long time. And, you know, I don't like to stand on concrete that many hours anymore. Hurts my feet. But she came with me to a gig, and I get out the car and it's go. You know, I get out the car, I'm loading in my PA, and I'm setting it up. You know, it's not much. You know, the gear that DJs use now is way different. You know, it's so much easier. But, you know, I'm loading in, and some venues aren't easy to load into. And nowadays I'm using a hand truck because I'm older. And so, like, you know, just take it easy. And then, you know, I do a sound check. I take the mic around. I see how far I can reach with it and do all that stuff and do the line of sight, you know, put up an extension if I need it. And then I start, you know, and then I, you know, you get like, it's so different here in Oregon. And I think probably most of the West Coast, because out East it's different. You know, a DJ is playing dance music during dinner time out there. You get to Philadelphia, you're having like a party. Here, it's like an hour and a half of just mellow music. They're doing all their things. They're taking their pictures. They're, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, you roll in, whether you're bringing in a PA or not, you got to switch it on, man. You got to shine and you got to smile. And you may not even be in the mood for it. And the weight of that is a lot, and people don't understand that. You know, you've got to be the show almost from the time you get in the door until you, even after you're done with the show, you're on. And you may be having a bad day. You may be experiencing a family loss, you know, and it's, you know, people don't quite understand that. So to do even less than 300 and you're still scratching at it, that's impressive.
Yeah. I always say, you know, you got to roll the wheels to pay the bills, which is true. But at the end of the day, you know, I get asked all the time, you know, man, are you ever going to slow down or, you know, or anything like that. And the answer is, it's not necessarily about slowing down or anything. It's just a matter of, as long as this is still fun, I'm going to continue to do it. You know, I still love every aspect of this, everything you were just talking about, whether it's everything that goes on behind the scenes, which is the majority of what you're doing. Everything you do behind the scenes leads up to the 90 minutes or 2 hours or however long that you're actually on stage. You know, it used to be the old joke that would go around. We get paid for setting up and breaking down and traveling and all that kind of stuff. And you know, the reward is getting to play the show. That was an old joke, you know, that kind of used to go around, but in a lot of ways it's true. But I love every aspect, you know, of it. It's just, it's what I've done everything for so long, you know, now, and it's always changing. It's you know, and what you have to do is as an independent artist, you know, is always changing. I don't have like a team of people, you know, doing anything, you know, for me. You know, we're totally self-contained and 100% independent. Everything from, you know, our booking and, you know, playing the music and running the business. There's whole other aspects to that. We have an entire online business as well as, you know, everything in person. Literally all of it to running the social medias and stuff. I mean, there's many, many artists who, you know, have a team of somebody who does all of that and running our website and stuff. And I don't have any of that stuff. it's literally me and my family, running everything. So if you're on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and you're talking to me, you're actually talking to me. Hey, you know,
who grows the beard?
Well, my beard and my belly have been shrinking a little bit here lately.
I need some of that with the belly. Yeah. I got a big old white beard. I might be able to play Santa Claus. So.
my whiskers are white these days.
Yeah, you got a nice beard, man. I'm impressed. But,
I'm fairly trimmed up now from the older days.
Hey,
I was giving William Lee Golden a run for his money there for a while, but I'm pretty trimmed up these days a little bit for me, I guess.
Let's talk about a song, and I'll let you know that in the 1990s, I was DJing in a country bar that I might have been able to play this song at.
I
guarantee you, it wouldn't have been a might. It would have been I would have played this in heavy rotation. They would have eaten it up. I loved when I was playing, it was called Rock and Rodeo, and so we, you know, focus was country, but at the end of each hour, you know, I played a little bit of rock and roll so people could open dance, and it drew in a crowd of people who didn't even like country that much. They weren't there for that. They were there because people were there and I could play whatever. And you know, they waited there for that little moment of ZZ Top and stuff. Right. But, I would play things that you didn't hear on the radio. And sometimes you might have seen them on CMT. Like I was playing the first song Joe Nichols ever did, Six of One, Half Dozen the Other. Nobody knows that song. It was his first song. He was independent back then. And we actually booked him at the Rock and Rodeo. Jeez, he was 19 and he could play, man. He could sing. It was great. He was a lot of fun. But anyway, let's talk about, give me a little description on Every Night I Burn Another Honky Tonk Down.
Well, it's fairly autobiographical. fired up and let her rip. It's pretty much what I do. It goes right along with what we were just talking about. You know, playing so many shows. Every night I burn another honky tonk down.
All right. Well, let's give her a listen. Dallas, a couple weeks ago, I'm just farting around Facebook, and You made a post about somebody that I admired for many years. This is a gentleman that I was exposed to when I was sitting on the board for Imus in the Morning. I used to run the local board for that talk show. Don Imus, who rest in peace. You know, he was doing his show out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. And
right.
Every now and then he'd have old Kinky Friedman on the radio with him in the studio.
The
golly, man. And I have never been that entertained.
There, yes.
He has got to have been a hard act to follow. He did this bit. He has this guy who has a really big voice. You know, he's got this really big radio voice, and I believe he's autistic. And I can't remember his name, but they did this bit where Kinky would go, "Thank you very much," and the guy would go, "You're welcome, Kinky," and he'd go, "Mucus Garcias." You know, he would do that whole thing, and they were just going back and forth. But man, tell me about. There was a picture you put up, a couple of them actually, of way back when, and you know, much younger Kinky, much younger Dallas. So how did you get involved with Kinky Friedman?
Well, the first time that we met and played a show was at the Southgate House in Newport, Kentucky, which is just across the river from Cincinnati in northern Kentucky. And it's a great, great venue. Still one of my favorite venues. Actually, I'm recording a live album there at the Southgate House on December 19th of this year. But that's a different story. So back to Kinky.
Yeah, it's all good, man. All good.
We were at the Southgate House Revival in Newport, Kentucky, and I got the call to see if I was available to open up for Kinky Friedman. He was coming through town, and I was like, "Well, yeah, well, hell yeah," you know. And so I got over, and we showed up for load in and sound check, and Kinky was sitting right there. He was sitting there smoking a cigar with Morella Rowling, our dear sister who owns the Southgate House, and they were just hanging out there. Kinky had already did his sound check. It was just Kinky and his guitar and his books. At the time, he was on a book tour as well, so his show would be a combination of him performing songs with his acoustic guitar and also reading from his books as well, and the current book rather that he had out at the time. And so we met and we just hit it off, and that night I played my opening acoustic set, and Kinky was on stage playing, and I'm with my wife Jenna Danielle Moore, and we're over at the merch booth, you know, and we're watching Kinky's show, and here comes this guy just walks up and starts talking to us like he's known us for, you know, 20 years, like our old best friend. And it's the actor Bill Paxton.
No kidding.
And Bill Paxton just walks up, and I don't even know why he was in Kentucky or whatever. And I had no idea it made sense that he was friends with Kinky, but I had no idea that he was familiar with my songs. He comes up and he's talking to me. He's naming off all of my songs. And he's like, I'm so glad you played King of Bullshit Mountain or whatever, you know. And he's Bill Paxton is like reciting my songs back to me, and I had no idea that he didn't, you know, even knew who I was or anything. And then he hung out with us until Kinky's show was done, and then we all hung out together. So it was really a kind of a wild night, and that's how we met Kinky. And then we went on to he gave me his phone number that night, you know. And of course Kinky lived in Kerrville, Texas. And this was before I was living in Texas, but we were not long after that, we were starting to play in Texas like a lot. And we would be playing a lot of times. We would be playing shows at the Hunt Store in Hunt, Texas, just down the road, a few miles from Kerrville, where Kinky lived. And there was a DJ around that we had become great, great friends with, Big G Gordon Ames. And he was very, very close friends with Kinky. And so whenever we would play the Hunt Store, which Kinky also performed his own shows there in Huntsville. All of the Texas legends, you know, played there. You know, Kinky and Billy Joe Shaver and Gary Pinon and Ray Benson, and you know, everybody played at the Hunt Store, you know, and everything still does. It's actually under construction right now because it was destroyed in the floods back this year. But it's going to be back up and running again here before too long, and it'll continue that Texas tradition of all the great live music. But like I was saying, all of our heroes were playing there, and so we started playing there on a regular basis, and on several times that we would play, Kinky would just come down because he just lived a few miles up the road, and Kinky and Big G Gordon Ames, they would come down and they would MC the show.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
And we just developed a friendship. Sometimes we would go to Buzzy's Barbecue there in Kerrville together and just have lunch and get to hang out. Fast forward a few years after that, there was a gentleman out of Buffalo, New York named Dan Gailey. And Dan was an executive producer for a few of Kinky's later albums. And Dan befriended us, and he did a whole thing where he paid for a house concert to have us come and play for him at this church up in Buffalo, New York. And when we got there, there was a whole care package that Kinky had sent to us of his tequila that he had at the time, the Kinky Freeman tequila, and a whole box of the Kinky Freeman cigars. And that was part of our welcome basket, I guess you'd say, that was there for us in the green room before we were playing. So Kinky had sent Dan Gailey a whole care package for us, you know, up there. And I believe the last time that I saw Kinky was at the Ameripolitan Music Awards in Memphis a few years ago. That was the first time that I know of that he had went to the Ameripolitan Awards. And I believe he had performed on either the Thursday, maybe the Thursday or Friday of the weekend. And I was there to check into the Ameripolitan, they called it a weekend, or it was kind of like a mini festival leading up to the awards. And it was when Dale Watson had moved the Ameripolitan Awards from Austin to Memphis. And so this took place in Memphis. So we were staying at the hotel that everybody was checking into was the guest house at Graceland. And so I'm walking up to check in, and they're sitting on the front porch all by himself. Smoking a cigar was Kinky. and so I just walked up and I sat down next to him. And that was the last time that we really got to you know, hang out and spend a little time together. But man, he was Kinky Freeman was one of those guys that like a lot of my heroes, you know, have been, on one aspect, you know, they seem like larger than life. But really, like, when you meet some of these guys, it's pretty cool when your heroes become your friends.
Dang.
And they're they're still always going to be like larger than life in my eyes, in my mind, but they're like exactly what you would think. Like when you meet Willie Nelson, like he's everything that you ever would think. Like Willie Nelson is, it's not like he turns off a switch and oh, you meet him and he's acts a different way. Well, Kinky was the same way. And you know, it's just like, and you're just sitting there like, oh wow, man, I'm hanging out with Kinky Freeman. and you know, he's got the best jokes and everything. I've always just been very, I just soak all that up, you know, and just be thankful that I was able to spend a little bit of time in their orbit, and you know, and soak up a little bit of that knowledge and take some of it with me to kick the can a little further down the road. And that's what keeps their music and their memories and stuff alive, is because you've got, you know, the next generation, or you know, and everything is still passing that along when they're not here on this earthly world anymore. Somebody's still got to sing their songs, hey. You know, and tell their stories. That's what keeps them alive. And so I've been very blessed with not all, but most of my heroes over the years. I've got to interact with and take a little piece of that, you know, with me, you know, and so it's what I keep doing, you know, and so it's pretty cool. So, and then just like we're doing right here, right now, that's what's keeping old Kinky alive, you know, telling his stories, you know. He's actually got a new album out right now that Jesse Dayton produced and put out. It's called The Poet of Motel 6.
Okay. I'll be digging in on it.
Yeah, and the song, The Poet of Motel 6, was the song that Kinky wrote about his dear friend and my honky-tonk hero, Billy Joe Shaver.
Oh, so shoot. Look at
that. It really is like a full circle, you know, thing, you know.
I'll tell you that when I first started talking about Kinky Freeman with you this morning, that bit of my life when I sat on the board for Imus in the Morning was right when he was running for governor of Texas. And yeah. He had said it. He said his slogan on the air. He said, "Vote Kinky Freedman, the first Jewish governor of Texas, and I'll lower the speed limit to 54.99."
Yes. Yeah.
Which is, yeah, I posted that in, you know, when you put up those pictures, I wrote that on there. And
yes.
You liked it. But anyway, yeah. Man, thanks for sharing that story. He is someone that I have followed since I heard about him, and he's made of good stuff. Hey, you know Garrett T. Capps too, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He's in San Antonio, owns that venue. I've had him on.
The Lonesome Road.
Yeah. It is a goal of mine to get down to that part of Texas, because I also really want to go to Green Hall, legendary Green Hall. And yes. I don't even care who's playing that night, but I'm going. Hey, let's talk about the...
I'm playing Green Hall the next time on December the 7th.
Oh, man. You would
come on, make like the price is right and come on down.
That's it? Let's talk about the second song I got, Sing My Song.
So Sing My Song was off of my latest album, which is... my 18th album released since 1996. And the album was called Gems and Jams. And it's the first time that I've ever did a solo acoustic record, me and a guitar and 15 songs that I wrote. And there's no overdubs. There's no post-production. It's about as raw and real as you can get. We set up one vocal mic and two condenser mics on the neck and the sound hole of the guitar. And just got in the room at our Soul Record Studios with Brian DeBruler, and I just played the songs and everything. There's no edits or anything. So each performance is literally just it was a one take type thing, or I would play the songs. I never played any of the songs more than twice, you know, and you would just go with whatever the better cut was. Sing My Song came about. That was one of the newer tunes that was on that on the Gems and Jams album. There's 15 songs, and it's about half of newer songs that I had written at the time, last year, you know, and the rest of it was newly reworked acoustic versions of older catalog stuff, songs that I had that may have been out of print for like a long time. And the songs still stood up and held up, but a lot of people didn't have access to the older recordings. The record label that I was on back in the 90s went out a long time ago, so a lot of my earlier stuff has been out of print for a long time, but I still wrote all those songs and I still own them all and own the publishing and everything. And so it was pretty cool to, you know, have some of the older songs get a new life. But on Sing My Song, it was also a kind of like Every Night Under Burn Another Honky Tonk Down, a fairly autobiographical, you know, song that I'd written. But it was one of the newer ones that I wrote that song maybe just a couple months before we recorded it. And eventually we'll get that onto, you know, an album with a full-blown production and everything of it, as it's originally intended to be. But I felt like, you know, that song, it just lended itself really well to an acoustic version of it just like that. So with my song, I thought Gems and Jams was a good place to start with it.
All right, well, let's listen to Sing My Song.
I've always fought the good fight for everything I've had. Say my prayers to Jesus and work hard like my dad. I tried to move a mountain so I could paint the town and built myself a mansion just so I could burn it down and win my last races run and my final battles won. And my body here on earth is dead and gone. Spread my ashes down in Texas. Raise up your glasses and sing my song. Well, I guess I've had a good time for what I can recall. Riding high up in the saddle just before I took the fall. And it should have been the death of me time and time again. But when they count me out, I always fight my way back in. And when my last race is run and my final battle's won and my body here on earth is dead and gone, spread my ashes down in Texas. Raise up your glasses and sing my song. Good fight for everything I've had. Say my prayers to Jesus. Work hard like my dad. I tried to move a mountain so I could paint the town and build myself a mansion just so I could burn it down and win my last races run and my final battles won. And my body here on earth is dead and gone. Spread my ashes down in Texas. Raise up your glasses and sing my song. Spread my ashes down in Texas. Raise up your glasses and sing my song. Spread my down in Texas, raise up your glasses and sing my song.
So you spoke a little bit about Willie Nelson when we were talking about Kinky Friedman, and Redheaded Stranger was a record that is one of multiple that my father had. And I don't know if he still has it, but that would be a record that I would sit down and listen to as a child and be able to just really sit down with it. So tell me a little bit more about your experience with Willie.
Well, the first time I ever got to do a show with Willie Nelson would have been probably late 1996 or early 97. I can't remember exactly when it was, but my first album had just been released. My Heroes Have Always Been Cowboys, which was, of course, a great Willie Nelson song that Sharon Vaughn wrote. So our show is at the Expo Center in Owensboro, Kentucky. And I'm young fella there, got my first record out, and I'm playing a show with my first show with my hero, Willie Nelson. but I have my first album out. So I go out and I'm doing my thing. And the album was dedicated to Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, and David Allan Coe, all of my heroes. What else am I going to do? I go out and I play the song. My heroes always went cowboy. And then I realized, oh, you dumbass, you just played Willie's song in front of Willie.
Oh gosh, he was probably going to play it.
After the show, when I get to meet Willie and we're hanging out talking, I'm a nervous wreck, thinking I just screwed the pooch here. You know, I'm never going to be asked back. So I'm like, Willie, man, I just want to apologize. I want to thank you so much for having us out and giving me the opportunity to open up. But I said, I really, really screwed up here. This is my first album. I'm trying to give him a copy of the CD. And I'm like, it's dedicated to you and Waylon and David. I'll go. And it's my heroes always comes by. I sang the song. I said, then I realized what I'd done. And he goes, well, did they like it? And I said, well, they clapped. They seemed to. And he said, well, sing it every night. Do it again.
That's so good. Hell yeah, man. I'll let you know. I have a fun celebrity quick story. Years ago when I worked in radio, I worked in pop radio, and we had Coolio showing up to do a concert, and the other competing pop station had the presents, you know, so they got to be on stage and do their whole thing. And my boss, we were a Clear Channel affiliate, so she contacted the Power 106. It's a Clear Channel hip hop station in Los Angeles, who the program director was at the time Coolio's wife. So my boss contacts her, and we set up an interview with Coolio, with me. And I got to talk to Coolio on my radio program. And in between our on-air stuff, he was like, hey, you know, I really want to go snowboarding. Is there anywhere we can go snowboarding? I said, yeah, I'll set it up. So I ended up picking him up at the airport and hanging out with him for 3 days. And back then, everyone called me Opie. That was my nickname that I got from that rock and rodeo place I told you about. They get up on stage, the, you know, all the other competing radio station on air personalities, they do their thing. And about three songs deep, Coolio is talking just on the mic. And he's like, hey, I just want to shout out my buddy DJ Opie. And the other radio station people were mad, but he was a really neat guy. And I got to do a little DJing with his DJ up at the ski lodge. And so we did a little back to back, and that was cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, Coolio was really nice. Hey, last couple of questions. And these are real serious ones. These are the ones I ask at the end that kind of wrap things up and put a little bow on it. So I need to know, and the world needs to know, how many 5 year olds would it take to kick your ass?
How many 5 year olds?
Yeah.
Well, my daughter is eight and a half. You have to say the half.
Yeah. Yep.
But when she was five, she did a pretty good job of kicking old dad's ass.
Buddy, my 3.5 year old has me nailed down too, man. She, you know, back when we were changing diapers, she had always kicked me right in the junk or the hernia. And I don't know if she knew I had any of those, but anyway, yeah, they get you. So last question, also very serious. Who wins in a street fight? Bruce Springsteen or Billy Joel?
Oh boy, I don't know. I ain't got a dog in that fight. I would call up Billy Joe Shaver and I'd let him hit him right between the mother and the father.
Dallas, it was a real pleasure having you on, man. And I said it off the mic. I'll say it on. You're welcome back anytime, brother. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you, bud.
Or as Kinky would say, thank you very much.
That's right.
All right. That's right. You have a good day, sir. Thanks. Take care.
All right. And adios, amigos.
Oh, man, Dallas. What an energy and what a blast to talk to him. He's been around, man. He's done it, and he's going to keep doing it. And I'm excited to maybe even do something with him up here in Oregon. We'll have to see. We'll keep you posted. All right, look, there's a thing I need to talk about coming up in January. I don't have the time to do it today, but next week I'm going to make the official announcement, and I'm so excited. It's all coming together really nicely. and I can't wait to talk about it. So stay tuned, if you will. Again, Malello Coffee Roasters, thank you so much. You guys are so nice and just do a wonderful job with, I just love coffee, so it's easy to please me, but they do a great job. Thank you to Moxley Media. You know, anytime I need something cool, Joe's got it. So if you need something cool, hit him up. Also, thank you to radneck.co. It's a cool thing. You might need some. So we will catch you next time on Welcome to the Woodshed. Take it away, Rascal.
You're welcome for listening to the Woodshed. Oh, thank you for listening to the Woodshed. We hope to see you next time on the Woodshed. Thank you for listening, what's on our minds. Oh, thank you